As part of the States Gazette's Pathway to Success series, expert in the field John Lever presents his 20 steps to APC success. Step 1, become a member of RICS.
Now this is very important. Before candidates eligible to start their APC, they really need to think about all the options available to them. They can sign up for free student membership at the RICS website, and you can go along to rics.org and do that. And they'll get a membership number which gives them instant access to a really useful load of information and knowledge and resources. So there's a big knowledge section on the website that I would suggest they go and look at.
Step 2, understand the APC process.
Candidates should make sure they really do fully understand the process. I talk to a lot of candidates near the final assessment who really don't understand what they're doing, which worries me as an assessor, because when we get you there on the day, you need to fully understand what you're walking into. So make sure you read the guides. You've got the candidate's guides, requirements and competencies guide, pathway guides, etc. I also suggest you read it every 3 months, that if you're undertaking a structured training period, because then that fits into your 3 monthly rotation on the meetings that you should be doing with your supervisors and counsellors. But again, if you're outside the UK, just check on the timeline and what the differences are for the different world regions.
Step 3, get a relevant job.
Now this is very, very important. It's important that you're employed in the right job in a relevant surveying role that matches your competencies and the pathway you're following. It's always really useful if you've got a committed and willing employer as well who has a structured training plan. And if you need any further advice, there's loads of information on the RICS website, and or talk to your RICS training advisor who's local to you. Again, a list of those are on the RICS website.
Step 4, get a supervisor and counsellor.
Now this is predominantly for our structured training candidates. If you're undertaking a training process that isn't structured, you only need a counsellor. But if you are undertaking structured training, it's important that you have a supervisor and counsellor. These people are vitally important to make sure that they help you through the process. They're not there to do it for you. It's all down to you to make sure you run it properly, but they're there to advise and guide you through the process. And obviously they can give you lots of hints and tips, and it's important they understand their roles and responsibilities as well, but they should be there to monitor and support you through the process.
Step 5, understand the competencies.
Now this is quite an important point as well. It's important that you realise that when you get to the final assessment, you need to demonstrate to the assessors you understand the different competencies that you've undertaken and the different levels, and understanding that level 1 is about knowledge, level 2 is doing, and level 3 is advising. The APC guides do provide a good explanation for this, and again it comes down to candidate and their supervisor and counsellor to interpret these competencies relevant to the pathway guide, relevant to the employment that the candidate has, and how they can meet those goals.
Step 6, understand the different levels.
Now level 1 is all about learning. We do get a lot of candidates who mix this all up and they think level 2 and level 3 is level 1. Unfortunately it isn't. When the assessors are trained, they're trained very strictly against the levels, and it's important that a candidate demonstrates this and the review their requirements against this level. So level 1, knowledge, understanding and learning. And it's all about what the candidate has done to achieve that knowledge base. Level 2 is about doing, so it's then about applying that knowledge base into real life examples, and it's very, very important again for candidates to understand their levels and be able to identify the experience they're gaining and how that fits to the level 2. And level 3, very similar to level 2, it's all again about experience, but it's now about advising, so it's taking on board what I did to produce that report or that process and then taking that on to the client to advise them on the information that I have drafted. And it's very, very important that candidates remember they have to have that ability to advise effectively, and the assessors will be testing stringently each of the levels 1, 2 and 3.
Step 7, get stuck in.
This is a key point. We tend to find around about 6 to 9 months into the process, we find candidates fall by the wayside with the APC process because they don't move it forwards, they don't drive it forwards. You have to realise and understand as a candidate, it is your career. It is important for you to take control of it, but if you don't, then it's going to start getting harder and harder because as it all starts backing up. So you need to continuously be on top of it, seeking those opportunities and developing that knowledge and experience.
Step 8, keep your documentation up to date.
This is predominantly focused at candidates undertaking structured training, but those who aren't still need to write up their documentation as well. But let's just focus on the structured training candidates. It's important to keep on track. It's important to look at this weekly. I wouldn't look at it daily. I think that's a little bit too keen. I would look at it weekly. Maybe you've done 2 hours today, 2 hours tomorrow on something which you can then accumulate into half a day. Half a day is the minimum recording period that you can record against a competency. And always remember, one competency to one duration. Don't start adding 3 or 4 competencies per duration. It's always important as well if candidates look at what they're doing and identify their experience and see where they're deficient in their competencies. And obviously maintaining regular communication with employer, supervisor, counsellor, etc. Just the last point then, really, the candidate's diary. Don't ignore it. Don't think your desk diary is good enough. This diary is very, very important for you to write it up, because that, in effect, helps you write up your summary of experience as you go along as well.
Step 9, get involved with the RICS.
I think this is a really big win for candidates. A lot of people ignore things like RICS Matrix. I'm a real advocate of getting involved with other trainees, other surveyors who've come through the process. RICS Matrix is a free sort of organisation for anyone on the APC process and 10 years post APC as well. It's a great network. I got involved when I was very much younger than I am today, and I've got a fantastic network of contacts, etc. So get involved. Looks good on your documentation. It's CPD relevant as well, more than likely. And the key thing there is that you can then show your assessors that you're engaging in the institution that you wish to join.
Step 10, record your continuing professional development.
Okay, now structured training candidates need to achieve a minimum of 48 hours CPD per year. And all other candidates need to take note there has been a recent change where it was 20 hours in the preceding 12 months. This has now been increased to 48 hours as well, and this happened back end of last year. There are some concessions, so I'm sure candidates out there who have that concession know about it, but pretty much everybody now will need to achieve 48 hours of CPD. Again, read the candidate's guide, fully understand how to record it, check the templates. They will ask you to write quite a bit of detail in there about why you were doing it, what you got out of it, and whether it's formal and informal. And again, understand what formal means. Formal means you have a learning outcome. So again, make sure you're doing this at the same time as you're recording your experience, so that you don't have everything all backing up at the end of the process.
Step 11, choose a suitable project or topic for your case study.
The case study is your opportunity to, in effect, showcase what you've been up to and your competencies and your knowledge and experience. So make sure you're choosing a topic that covers a broad breadth and depth of your experience and the competencies that you're declaring. And again, remember that the case study will become the basis of your 10-minute presentation, and also the final assessment assessors will take time to read it, and will have a 10-minute section in the assessment as well to question you on it.
Step 12, write your case study in good time.
If you've seen the timeline wall chart that we produce and give away for free, you'll see we talk about starting the case study if you're a 24-month candidate. We would suggest you start that at month 15. If you're a 12-month training candidate, you'll be starting that pretty much 3 months into your 12 months. And if you're any other candidate come forward without structured training, you've got to get onto this straight away. It is one of those things that takes a lot of time. And a candidate needs to, again, discuss this with supervisor and counsellor. I always say as well, talk to at least 10 people. Make sure at least 3 of them know nothing about surveying, because they'll be a fantastic resource to read it over for you and give you lots of help. One last little comment in here. Statistically, from my experience, I've found that the case study takes about 3 to 4 months to write, and you will more than likely substantially rewrite it 6 to 10 times.
Step 13. Only attempt the APC final assessment if you are ready.
This is quite a key point. From my experience of assessing, which is nearly 20 years now, I've probably done in excess of 1,500 or so assessments. We do find a lot of candidates come forward very, very early, and sometimes a little bit too soon. Eligibility to sit, people look at the timeline and the time scales, go, oh, I've got to only do a minimum of 24 months or 12 months, or I can come forward straight away. And it's not about time, it's about competence, and I think that's quite important. I also find some candidates are pressurised into going. There's other career development that's hung on this, and they go and have a go. It's not really what it's about. If you haven't got the relevant experience, you're not going to get through this. So it is very, very important to understand that. I often say to candidates, you know, what takes me 6 months might take you 3 months to achieve, because of the quality of experience, and maybe my aptitude is slightly lower as well. So it's about the individual, it's about the experience, and I think it's very, very important to bear that in mind. Don't just assume that you can walk in there, and if you haven't done it, you can kind of get through just on knowledge base. You won't be able to. So I think it's very, very important for you, your supervisor and counsellor, to sit down and ask yourself, do I actually feel ready? I think you'll know when you do. But on that note, don't put it off either, because you constantly don't feel ready. I think there is a challenge to be grasped there. And lastly, make sure you, if you decide to defer, you let the RICS know in good time. Because if you don't show up on the day, that's going to eat into your fee that you've paid, and the chances are you'll have to pay again to sit next time if you haven't informed the RICS.
Step 14, get your submission documentation right first time.
The key thing about submission documentation, I would probably put a statistic of about 60% of the candidates' documentation I've seen and experienced in my nearly 20 years of assessing has been poor. And that's a worry, really, because before you get to the assessment, I get that 3 or 4 weeks before you turn up, because you send it to RICS, they then send it out to the assessors. And I think it's quite important to make sure that you realise that you're collating that for a top quality document, and you're going to make sure you hit the right dates that you're coming forwards as well. And on that note, just on the dates of when you need to submit documentation, please, again, if you're in different world regions, just make sure you check those dates on the relevant pages of the RICS website. Once you've sent the documentation to RICS as well, remember, you can't get it back, so make sure there's no mistakes in it. If there are mistakes, unfortunately, that's going to look at us as from an assessor's perspective as you not putting your best foot forwards. And it's sometimes as well will make your job a little bit harder at the assessment, because you've got to prove to us that those mistakes aren't the way that you are normally. Because we look at that and say, well, you know, is this the way you're going to present to your client? Is this the way you're going to treat your clients? So first step with all of this, and a really high priority, is making sure that documentation is spot on.
Step 15, preparing your presentation.
This will come along once you've finished your case study. You'll think, thank goodness I've finished it, I can relax now. Sadly not. You've now got to look at the presentation that you're going to have to present. It is a 10-minute presentation. It must be based on your case study. And it's important that you deliver well on the day and that you present really well. And again, making sure, I always say, bring some notes with you on the day to the presentation. But it's not a script to be read. It's there as a bit of a safety mat for you, and making sure that you deliver that slick presentation. This is your first opportunity in the interview. It's the first 10 minutes, your opportunity to set the tone and the scene for the rest of the interview. Again, I would say probably about 40% of the candidates I've seen haven't done very well with this. So if you practice this well, you can ace this bit and then hopefully end up with a really positive interview.
Step 16, delivering your presentation.
Okay, so don't forget, you've got to deliver your case study. I do hear a lot of candidates being told, you've got to come up with something new because the assessors will be bored if you don't, because they've read your documentation a few times. But quite frankly, I would just deliver the case study as you've written it. We expect you to deliver it. We expect you to deliver it in a professional presentation standard. Now, whether that has a flip chart or whether you bring some other visual aids, maybe an A3 sheet that you'll pop on the table, maybe some handouts. Keep everything under A3, make sure it's good quality. Don't bring it folded and twisted and creased. Make sure it's presented well.
Step 16, delivering your presentation.
Okay, now this is very, very important, because this is pretty much the first thing that's going to happen in the interview. After the introductions and the welcome by the chairman, you're going to be handed over to the candidate to deliver their 10-minute presentation. The assessors will expect this to be excellent and to be well presented. And if you think about it, as it is the first 10 minutes, it's about setting the tone and the scene for the rest of the interview. If you want to bring visual aids, that's no problem at all. Keep it all under A3 in size, whether that's a flip chart or an A3 sheet on the table, whichever suits the candidate. And, of course, make sure it's good quality. As with presentations, good eye contact, good body language, clarity of thought and structure, that all comes down to practice. And it's one of those things that you need to make sure you do a really good job at. And ultimately demonstrating a top quality skill and awareness of your audience, and you're a really good communicator. This is all part of the communication competency, because you've got visual, graphical and now verbal communication that you're in front of us doing.
Step 17, preparing for the final assessment day.
Okay, well, the final assessment, without a shadow of a doubt, is probably one of the most stressful things I've ever done. I talk to a lot of very confident people who then say to me, gosh, when I got to the assessment, I couldn't believe how nervous all of a sudden I became. I've seen some very, very confident individuals that I've coached through the process fall apart at a mock interview, and so on and so forth. The stress does kind of kick in. So it's about being aware of this, and it's a good idea to, as always, visit venues before you go there. I always suggest a week before, just so you know how long it's going to get you, or how long it's going to take you to get there, and think about parking. Certainly if you're going to some of the London venue, that's going to be quite expensive on the parking side. So again, being aware of that. Remember, you cannot be late for this assessment, okay? As a chairman, if a candidate turns up late, I have to think about the next candidate and whether that will impact on them. And if it does, I wouldn't actually then deliver that assessment. So make sure you are there on time. Prepare a checklist. It's always good to have a checklist, and you'll be very nervous on the morning. So the fact you have a list that you can just check and check again and then check again just to make sure you've not forgotten anything is really useful. And obviously you prepare that checklist when you're not being stressed. So that's a really helpful thing to do. And then ultimately leading into the interview, make sure you put the preparation time in. Most candidates I talk to get referred. Their opening comment is, "I wish I'd done more. Now I realise what it's all about." So take the advice, heed the advice, and make sure you put the effort in.
Step 18, structure of the final assessment.
So at the assessment centre, you'll have to register with the RSS reception first, and it'll be pretty obvious where they are. And the administrators there are all lovely and very helpful, and they'll try and put you at your ease. However, you do then get shoehorned into what I like to call the waiting room of death. It's probably the scariest experience prior to the assessment. There's a lot of you crammed into a very small space and everyone's very nervous. You can cut the atmosphere. But ultimately, you're going to get out there as soon as possible. You're only in there for a few minutes. They'll brief you on what the whole process is, and then you'll be wandering off down to the interview room. They'll normally give you a number, so you need to match that number to the door. And then behind that door will hopefully be the three assessors, two assessors and a chairman, who are there to help you. The chairman is pretty much there to facilitate the whole process, and they'll explain everything to you, and then they'll come over to you to deliver your presentation. That'll be about then followed by 5 to 10 minutes worth of questions on your case study and the presentation you've just delivered. And then the assessors will move into the declared competency areas for about 30 minutes or so, covering all of the knowledge, the experience and the advice that you've been giving and that you've declared in your documentation. And then the chairman will cover rules of conduct. Now, you might get rules of conduct coming out during the interview as well, but generally the chairman will pick that up as well at the end, just to make sure that's been covered properly. If you're doing the online ethics module, that's great, and that's a good starter for 10, but don't assume that is enough for when it comes to conduct and ethics. And the other point is as well, then at the end of the assessment, the chairman will give you the opportunity for any last comments. And that's really there if you feel, oh, there's something you wanted to add or embellish to what you've said, or if you think you've made a mistake, you can correct it. But don't feel you have to say anything. If you're happy just to say no, that's fine. Thank you very much. And then the RSS will inform you of the result at a later date. I believe it's within 5 working days, but that's in the UK, so you'd need to check what that is again in the different world regions.
Step 19, final assessment questioning.
This is quite an important point. I have trained in excess of 5,000 assessors over the last 10 years, and they are very, very keenly trained to follow the different levels of competency when they come to question you. And I think it's very, very important that you practice some good question and answer practice in the preceding weeks up to the assessment, because the key point here is you being able to listen to what you're being asked and then being able to respond succinctly. You'll be asked to explain your understanding, the level one, the experience you've had, the level twos, and the advice you've given, the level three. And don't forget, advice isn't just about going, oh, I gave this advice, but you need to say why you gave the advice as well, because it's reasoned advice. And they'll be interested in your actions and your opinions and generally how you undertake your business professionally. And I think it's quite important. A lot of candidates I talk to who walk out that assessment going, oh, I really enjoyed that, is because it was all about them. It is because they've put in really good examples and because they've put plenty of practice into that question and answering process. And also remember, your submission documents, anything you hand in is a basis of the final assessment questioning. So anything you've written is fair game.
Step 20, RICS rules of conduct and ethics.
Okay, now this is a subject very dear to my own heart. I've taken a view about 10 years ago that we need to know how to do this properly, and I've been training it for about that amount of time. Now, the rules of conduct and ethics, global ethical standards, they're now called the 5 global ethical standards. These are very, very important. There is only one competency in the whole assessment process where you can fall down on that competency alone, and that is rules of conduct and ethics. So please make sure you understand it. A lot of candidates only put effort into this in the last 2 weeks leading into the assessment. If you've been mentored by me, we would start at day one, and that might be 24 months in history when we would have started walking through this topic. They are one of the key areas of APC knowledge and experience. Remember, it is a level 3 mandatory competency. And if you get one question substantially wrong here, you will be referred. So you need to make sure you're on top of this. I can't kind of stress this enough. I may be labouring the point on purpose, but the point is You need to make sure you have the latest version, be able to discuss the rules and ethics and how you would conduct yourself. Just one last point here as well. Just because you might not be engaged in a specific ethical area or rule within your current employment, it's not about who you're employed by, it's about you, because you could then go on to set up your own practice, and the assessors would expect you to therefore know members and firms' rules inside out.
For more detailed guidance on the entire process, follow the Pathway to Success series in Estates Gazette and on EGI.